You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lierley, and today is going to be pretty great because we're talking to guys about reproductive freedom. This is so cool. This is like so unusual because women talk about this stuff all the time. But I just got back from an incredible meeting in Washington, D.C., Free and Just is an organization that held a storyteller summit. And it brought together storytellers from all over the country to tell stories about personal situations related to reproductive freedom and abortion. And it was heartwarming and heartbreaking and compelling. And I learned, even as a doctor, I learned so much. And one of my favorite panels was Men for Choice, which is an organization that we're going to hear a lot about in just a minute. They are literally men talking about why abortion and reproductive freedom is important, not just to women, but to all of us. So we're going to jump right into this conversation. I'm thrilled to introduce y'all to our panel. Our panel of experts. We have Alan Tipple joining us. Alan is the Wisconsin Youth Organizing Manager with Men for Choice. He is a Sheboygan native. He's a UW graduate. He's got a double major in political science and economics with a certificate in public policy. You were made to do this, Alan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This has been a long time coming, I'm hoping.
Yeah, really. Well, when you first reached out to me, I had no idea. I'd never heard of Men for Choice before.
Yeah.
And then the conversation we had was just like, yes, yes, yes. I mean, I had a hard time getting off the phone because everything we talked about was, it just made so much sense. But I too, even as an abortion provider and somebody who talks about this all the time, I too was learning something from you.
Yeah, I think there's something definitely very interesting about organizing men specifically around this issue, as it's, you know, something that hasn't really been done very much outside of Men for Choice, I would say. And it has its own very unique challenges to it.
Yeah, it does. And helping us flesh out this conversation, we've got my homies.
Notice how she didn't use the word experts.
Yeah, exactly.
That was not the word she chose.
That's the voice of my oldest son, Abraham Lierley. Abe, thank you for driving all the way up from Milwaukee to hang out with
us course.
This morning.
It is in the middle of a terrible week, a beautiful day. Uh-huh. A great day to be on the road, a great day to be here in the studio.
Yeah.
So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And I should mention, you are a public school teacher. You mm-hmm. teach middle school music. So not only mm-hmm. are you a guy, you're 26.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think.
But not only do I interact with 26-year-old men, I also interact with
11-year-old boys.
I know it's coming for any of you guys.
And also joining us is my partner, Craig Carlson. Craig, thank you for coming in today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You bet. So, Craig, you are a really unique add to this panel because you represent a lot of stereotypes.
Well, I got that going for me. Great.
I mean, you're a police officer.
Yes.
And you are, you're of my generation. See how I yes, tenderly said that?
That was nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. But you also have three daughters.
I do.
Yeah. You're a girl dad.
Mm-hmm.
You have been that guy at the grocery store buying
Those things. Yes.
So you come to this conversation with a very different perspective. But even before our relationship has really changed how you approach reproductive rights and abortion issues.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a big difference between old me and what I am today. But
yeah,
I'm not proud of that old me, but I think I've learned some things.
But I think that also puts you in a really unique spot to give voice and steel man and, you know, give the best possible argument that you can for the other side that we have here.
Correct.
Well, and that's the whole goal, is to have a conversation and to share ideas and perspectives. And so, Alan, I'll go to you. Because you've got all of this education, you're homegrown. What made you decide that Men for Choice was a good fit for your talents? You could have done anything, but here you are in the reproductive rights arena.
Yeah, well, wow, that's a big question to start off with. I would say that, when I was in my senior year of college, I was, looking for opportunities, as all college students are, to like get more involved, do stuff in my field. And I got this text that was telling me about, Men for Choice as an organization, and they have, this fellowship program and stuff like that. And I looked at this text originally and I was like, this looks like a scam. Is this real? is this
nobody wants to know what men think about this. Come on.
But I eventually got a call from the guy is Dwayne. Dwayne does great work. And from there, just kind of kicked off. I joined the fellowship program where, I was like, hey, it's like an internship. It's something I can do. It's something I'm really interested in. And as I went through this and learned more about it, I was like, whoa, this is really like a one-of-a-kind thing. This is the only organization that's really getting men organized around reproductive rights. And so I got organized experience doing that, and then went and did organizing during the 2024 campaign. And after that, and seeing the results of young men going more rightward, I got a call being like, hey, we're looking for an organizer out in Wisconsin for Men for Choice. And I was like, this is a way that I can really make an impact right now. And that's what I want to do, is I want to make an impact. And since then, it's been fantastic. And I'm really glad that I chose to do it.
Yeah. Were you organizing in this repro space in 2024, or just organizing in general?
No, yeah, I was just doing organizing in general. I was out in Dodge County, which is a very rural county in Wisconsin.
Uh-huh. But you come from Sheboygan, so like you get the people who live here.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, Sheboygan has its blue spot, but Dodge County is like one of those counties that's like 30% blue. Mm-hmm. And having to do Democratic organizing in that area was tough. Yeah. It was tough, but it was very rewarding. And then now I'm jumping into another area where it's also tough in its own different ways, is getting men around this issue that doesn't usually directly impact us. I mean, not that people know on the surface, at least.
Right. It's much deeper than that.
Yes. Yes.
Well, and Abe, you understand this fundamentally because you grew up with me. And this is dinner table talk at our house.
And this was in the professional magazines that were left on the dinner table.
Do you remember that pelvic model that I had?
I do. There were all sorts of interesting takes on toys around the house.
I just want, and I don't usually pipe in. Oh my gosh. I feel so bad for you.
So actually, really quick story. We have an Apple photo album that plays through every single picture that we have as a family. During my high school graduation, this is going on in the background. In this photo album, amongst probably 1,000 photos, there's one single photo of a
giant vulvar hematoma.
A giant bloody tumor. It's like this game of Russian roulette at my graduation party of, when's the tumor coming up? You took the tumor out, right? She did not remove the tumor from the slideshow.
Did you lose any friends over that?
No, it was a good laugh.
There you go.
I would say that your friends maybe are more curious having seen that.
And we don't have to try to spin this.
I think that's a great point, though, that I've learned there are many things that happened at your household, the things you've talked about that, mm-hmm. how many times have I said, we never talked about that. That never came up at my house. Yeah. But I think that's very important. I think that's a good basis to get Men for Choice and getting men involved in that stuff, is getting that information, things that we didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the voice of Craig Carlson. We also have Abraham Lyerly and Alan Tipple. We're talking about Men for Choice and the role of men in our reproductive freedom efforts. So, Craig, let's go back to you, because you raised a family with three daughters, but you never had these conversations? Come on.
We didn't. I mean, it was not until my divorce that I had to think of some things myself. And, that was the time when the girls were growing up and things started happening, bodies started changing. And, I was like, man, we didn't talk about this as I was growing up, so why would I talk about it with my kids? It just wasn't something and that came up.
When you were growing up, I don't even know. Did you have sisters around the house?
I had one sister.
One sister. All right.
We didn't talk about much. Things were kept quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
I think that happens a lot. I mean, our household was not normal. What was your household like growing up?
It was, so my parents are both public school teachers, so education was always a very big thing. Yes.
Try not to blow up the microphone.
But as far as I remember, most of the education I had around, you know, sex and reproductive health was in school, in the classes I had. Mm-hmm. Whether that was just a bridge too, you know, awkward for my parents or something like that. But I feel like I totally agree that I think that's something very often that parents don't want to broach because it can be very, very awkward to talk about.
Mm. Craig is smiling. Yeah. Like, yep, I don't want to talk about it.
You know, I am thankful that I had good education at the schools I went to, but you know, in areas where you don't, then issues will occur in that way. But I think that it's very.
So it was more than National Geographic and the occasional Playboy that you learned some things?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Am I alone here?
I think that's really.
I'm with you, Craig.
I think that's really common, though. It's a really difficult thing to talk about.
Yeah.
And nobody, you know, it's not something that you get to practice. You get like, you get to have this conversation once or twice, and you don't. It's a new thing every time you approach it, and it's always kind of weird and unwieldy. I don't know. I feel like in our culture, it's not something that we have necessarily prioritized or necessarily sort of normalized.
Yeah.
Especially for men.
Yeah.
I think. You've got three brothers. Your brothers do not talk to me about this, except for Lindsay. He's special. But your other brothers, but their friends
Either
do.
Kids.
Yeah. But their friends do. I mean, they'll come to me, they'll send me messages, they'll ask me questions about contraception or whatever. And I'm honored by that. But it's usually the women. It's rarely the men or the boys who are asking questions.
And I think the thing is that, you know, it can be very awkward for men to talk about this issue in a serious way. You know, if it comes up around men in like friend groups, I see it typically as in like jokingly or, you know, in the worst case, like the locker room talks type
stuff. Yes.
And so it's very rarely brought up in a very healthy, like, oh, let's talk about this and our experiences sort of way.
Yeah. We just don't have the framework to approach that conversation. We haven't had that conversation in a productive way. It's difficult to bring that into the future, having never done it healthily.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the best part is you can bring it out as joking around or something, but people are really trying to learn. And if you can hide the fact that you don't know this stuff and make it funny, you're still learning something.
Yeah, absolutely.
But are you learning the right thing?
Yeah.
That's the question.
And I think there's an aspect too there that you kind of touched on is that it's it feels wrong to not know. So it's sometimes hard to ask that question because you feel like, oh no, I don't know this and that's wrong with me. That's something wrong, you know? So people are scared to ask questions about that.
Well, especially in that joking scenario, if you're in that sort of joking friend group, you're going to get clowned on a little bit.
Yeah.
You don't know something. Yeah. There's that sort of culture of when it's a joking culture and you have some sort of flub or you admit to not knowing something, it's easy to feel vulnerable there.
Right. Yeah. Well, the people around you don't know either. So it's like this whole game of ignorance, building on ignorance, which is why the conversation we're having is so very important. All right, we're going to take a little break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about this music. And we are also going to go a little deeper into Men for Choice, what it is, and how people can get involved.
Perfect.
This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. It's me, Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I am sitting at this table with a bunch of dudes talking about abortion. It's fun, right? I'm having fun.
Good time so far.
I've got Alan Tiffle here. He is the Wisconsin Youth Organizer with Men for Choice. My son, Abraham Lyerly, is joining us, as is my partner, Craig Carlson. That might sound kind of crazy, but you'll get it. Just stick with us here. And I did want to talk just for a minute about our music, because, you know, I love to highlight Wisconsin bands. Today, we're featuring Kyle Magna and the Monsoons. They are a Fox Valley-based band. They've been around forever. If you haven't seen them live, that is really the way to see them. They describe themselves as dark indie blues folk rock feel. Whoa. All of those things. I know it's a mélange. Yeah. They were at the Electric City River Jam in Kaukauna last weekend. They're going to be in Sister Bay in July. And of course, Mile of Music, which is a blast. If you haven't seen Mile of Music, OMG. Bands everywhere. Lots of local bands. So,
got to get out there and support your local artists. Got to do it.
It is so important. And right now, when things are feeling pretty heavy in the world, art is the thing that's going to save us. Yeah. Abe, you're opening your mouth like
I don't know if it's I don't know if it's going to save us, but it's really nice just to get down and just sit there and listen to just some good live music.
Yeah.
It's just always a good way to spend an afternoon.
But you're a music teacher, so you might be biased. Well, and Alan, you're a music guy too. You like music.
I do like music, yes. Yeah. And that's one of the best parts I like about living in Madison as well, is a bunch of free music festivals. And my uncle, like I was mentioning before, is kind of in the music scene down there, and he'll take me to a ton of stuff, and I really love that a lot.
That's that sense of community.
Yes, yes.
That we all need more of right now.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That you are creating through your work with Men for Choice.
Yes, yes.
Which is an organization that helps bring men to the table to talk about reproductive issues. So tell us more about Men for Choice. Where did it come from? What are the goals?
Yeah, so Men for Choice, like a many fantastic idea, started with two guys talking in a bar.
Fantastic. I love that. we've got applause from Todd on the other side of the glass. Yeah.
Many terrible ideas.
Yeah, I'm sure all great ideas, you know, start there.
It's a lot of ideas
obviously.
From those places.
And they always get outside the bar too, you know, always get off the ground. But yeah, so in Chicago, our two founders, you know, had a conversation after one of them had gone to a rally or some sort of event that was advocating for reproductive rights, and had noticed, you know, where's all the men here? You know, this also impacts men. Why are they not here? So they had a conversation. It was like, we just need to make an organization to get men more involved in this, to make them realize that this is something that's important to them. And so that conversation happened 10 years ago. And now, you know, we've got stuff going on in Florida, in Georgia, in North Carolina. I'm starting out in Wisconsin now. And it's really blossomed from there. And our biggest part of our, you know, program is our fellowship program, where we take 10 weeks to take pro-choice men to educate them about what abortion is, you know, what's going on with it in the United States, and how to organize around this issue and how to communicate to their friends about it. And as you mentioned, it's really about creating a community, because these men then go on to have conversations with their friends about this topic. And that's really, you know, how we've seen it make a lot of progress, because very unfortunately, there are a lot of men out there who don't listen as much to women as they will to other men. And so when they hear their guy friends telling them, hey, this is important, this is something you should care about, they go, something clicks in their head and they go, oh,
so
you're right.
Just to tie that back to our earlier conversation, we were talking about how it's really common for men to lack the framework to have these discussions. What I'm hearing you say is that you work to provide that framework, and then you let people have that conversation on their own. Here's a way to talk about this in a productive way. I want you to have an honest conversation with your friends. Don't take, you know, my talking points, but like talk with your friends about it.
Yeah.
See what they think.
We certainly encourage that. For sure. The part of our fellowship is bringing them in with like a set framework, like a community conversation kind of slideshow that they go through. Wow. And it's a good way to like, you know, just have this outline for them to follow. But then obviously after that, it's like, hey, go just talk to your friends about this. One of the biggest things is like, call out the BS, you know, when you hear that locker room talk or you hear somebody say something that you know is wrong, make sure you say that, because if that's your friend saying that, they will listen to you, or at least they should listen to you when you tell them like, hey, that's wrong, or you shouldn't say that, or, you know, hear this and that and the other.
How do you build up the courage to make people confront those those misconceptions.
That's such a great point, Craig, because I think that a lot of times, whether we're talking about abortion or anything else, if you don't feel courageous enough to mm-hmm. counter that or curious enough to ask the question, you just kind of go with it.
Yeah. So a part of it is building that community with other guys. So throughout the fellowship, you know, you're paired with a fellowship coordinator. That's one of the roles that I've taken on, and a bunch of other guys from your area who are doing the same thing. And you see these other guys who have done this before or are doing this currently, and it's to instill them with the idea that you can do this, you know. And I think there are a lot of other tough conversations guys have had with their friends, but it's just not one of these. They just haven't mm-hmm. talked about this topic before. And just realizing that this is just another topic that you can broach with your friends, that you can talk about, that you care about, kind of, you know, pushes them over the edge, or hopefully will push them over the edge to talk to their friends about this.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a confrontation. It could be just questions and make people think.
Absolutely. And that's very important also, is providing a safe space to ask questions. Because like we were talking about before, sometimes it's very hard to ask those questions, or very hard to know if it's okay to ask those questions. And providing that safe space with your friends is a great space to, you know, answer those questions and broach those conversations.
And making it relevant.
Yeah.
Like, why does this matter to you? Mm-hmm. Because it is relevant to men, especially these days. We're going to get into that in our next segment, and we're going to talk about, why is abortion political? Because it's healthcare. I mean, I know it's healthcare, but do you know it's healthcare? We'll talk about that. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on WISS, WGBW, and the Civic Media Radio Network. Take these thoughts away. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with Alan Tipple from Men for Choice. Abraham Lierley, my oldest son. He's an adult male.
And if you're watching on video, you might see public school teacher.
Oh, he's also a public school teacher. Hey, and my partner, Craig Carlson, who's a police officer and has opinions.
A couple. Just a few. Okay,
so I'm going to go to you, Craig. Why is abortion a political issue?
That is a great question.
Big question.
I think
part of it might have to do with, it's such a dirty word. You know, growing up, that was something nobody talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Men for Choice and, you know, all the advocacy work that you're doing is getting people to understand what that really means.
Mm-hmm.
You had your idea of what it was, you know, as many people say in your comments, you're a baby killer, but that is not it. There is so much more, and so much more needs to be done to educate people as to what that all means.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as why it's political, I don't know. That's a great question.
You know, to your point, I remember having a conversation with a man, a listener, who he and his wife had been going through some pregnancy challenges, and they suffered a miscarriage. And when they looked at her medical record, it said she had a spontaneous abortion, which is the medical term for miscarriage. And they were so ashamed and angry because she didn't have an abortion. She had a miscarriage. And that just speaks to how hot that word is,
right.
Mm-hmm. And how we use it so inappropriately and in such a political way.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know, Abe, what do you think? Why is it political?
Oh, I mean, there's been 50 years of advocacy work to make it what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
There's been so much energy and passion from the right trying to change hearts and minds, and they've succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
They've successfully redefined what the word means from the legal and medical definition that is the actual, you know, rubber hits the road. This is how we have to legislate and think about and actually apply medical science and our understanding of the human body. And they've changed it into a big emotional argument over when does life start. And it's an incredibly compelling sort of thing to argue about. So I think that there was just a lot of rhetorical strength and a lot of passion and a strong movement over half a century to make it what it is today. I wish I had a happy outcome for that that thought, but I feel like I see how we got here, mm-hmm. and I just find here to be a very regrettable place.
Mm-hmm. So with Men for Choice taking this on, how do you push back on this? We should have been pushing back 50 years ago.
Oh yeah,
and addressing these inaccurate words, addressing the politicization of healthcare, but we failed to do that. But that's your work right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and as you said, I think you hit the nail on the head. There's that, like, they have been building this political project for mm-hmm. over 50 years, and that's what Men for Choice is trying to be a part of. And our executive director has talked about it multiple times during our meetings and stuff like that, is that we need to now build that same movement. And it really, you know, kind of sucks that we're behind, because they've been building this for however long and they're still building it. And now we're realizing, oh, we took this a little bit for granted. We mm-hmm. thought, you know, that Supreme Court ruling was going to hold up forever. We didn't think that was going to go away. And now we're realizing we need to build the same movement. And that's what we're trying to be a part of.
Yeah. And it's back in the States.
Yes.
And that's with the fall of Roe. Abortion is back in the States. And I noticed earlier when you were talking about where you're organizing, it's Georgia mm-hmm. and North Carolina and Wisconsin, a lot of mm-hmm. the swing states where, you know, you need a political presence. You need to make sure that this accurate information is there. So I'm just going to throw this out to all of you, whoever wants to jump in on this. What is the problem with abortion being back in the States? It sounds so logical when Republicans are messaging this, you know, like, of course you want the states to control this, right?
I would like to jump in on this one. So I don't know if you all have ever seen, there's like a map out there that kind of shows the map of the United States and in like varying color, what states have access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And so you get down near the Bible Belt where it's a lot of red, you know, a lot more restrictions. And so what you look at when you look at this map is, you see that someone who's living in Florida, they would have to, in order to get abortion, a procedure they need, a lot of people need to live.
I think that might be worth just, sorry, not to interrupt, but to say, you know, if you're in, you know, South Florida and you need to travel for this, it can be an absolute need. It's not
exactly.
It's not a want, it's sometimes a complete need.
Exactly. And what you have to do to travel is you have to book a flight, you have to take off of work, you have to book a hotel, you have to then pay for the procedure, and you have
child care.
Yeah, and
most of these people have other children.
Yeah, mm-hmm. most people who get an abortion are already mothers, which mm-hmm. is a notion that most people don't know. And if you look at this travel and you think to yourself, oh man, if this was something that I was going to do just as a vacation for fun, this would be a hassle to figure out, you know, logistically. And the problem is that this happens sporadically. This happens when you're not expecting it. This happens when this happens to a lot of people who are very low income. And so then you just compound all these factors and it's like, how is someone supposed to deal with this?
No, I mean, you could be high income in the middle of a work project. Or,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like, there's a million things that can get between you and a spontaneous 2-week vacation six states north.
Yeah. Right. Like,
that's the sound of Abraham Lyerly. We also have Craig Carlson and Alan Tipple joining us. We're talking about Men for Choice and why men are a key part of the conversation we have about abortion. So, Abe.
Sorry, there was one more layer to this question about, now that it's come back to the States, what does that end up meaning?
Mm-hmm.
That I have found disturbing in a lot of ways to the sort of fabric of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how states are sort of being pugilistic towards each other now.
Yeah.
How states are using their own protections and their own law enforcement agencies and their own motives to go after other states and citizens inside of other states to prevent abortion pills, for example, from coming in to states that have abortion bans.
Because we've actually seen the number of abortions go up.
We have seen it go up.
Since the fall of Roe because of medication abortion.
Which then adds a lot of, how do we actually enforce this? If you are comfortable with the idea of banning abortion,
Are you comfortable with what that will take to enforce? Are you comfortable with the additional spending, with the additional rights that you need to roll back, with all the extra work that needs to come in? And then we're in these situations like what's happening in New York, where New York is sheltering a doctor from extradition to another state. It feels almost like a sort of Baltics, like we're balkanizing.
Yeah. Well, and as a doctor who works in a state that has a shield law, I feel safe practicing in Minnesota and living in Wisconsin. But I can tell you that many of my colleagues who practice in red states feel very uncomfortable. And, you know, I'll share a personal story from this past, from yesterday. Amber Thurman is a woman from Georgia, was a woman from Georgia. Amber died because she did not receive the healthcare that she needed. And I got to talk with her mom about this, and she ran down the story, and as she was talking, she looked at me earnestly and said, why didn't the doctors help her? The doctors took an oath to take care of their patients, and they let her die. And there was I couldn't say anything. I had no response.
There's no right answer.
There is no right answer because the doctors are stuck. Yeah, we took an oath and we want to take care of our patients and we know exactly what we need to do. But we also have hospital administrators and our bosses and attorneys and politicians telling us, no, we can't. But when can we? So it puts doctors in impossible situations and makes it incredibly hard to practice in these states that ban abortion. And we're seeing doctors leaving states. Like Idaho has lost more than a quarter of their OBGYN workforce. They don't have a high-risk pregnancy doctor anymore. That doesn't just impact a pregnant woman, that impacts families and whole communities and frankly the state as a whole. But those consequences aren't felt immediately. And I think for a lot of folks, unless it is right there in your lap, and that's probably why women really feel this more deeply, because we have a period every month, whether we want it or not, whether we have tampons in the house or not, we still have a period. We have to worry about birth control all the time. It's different for men.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, that's one of the things we try to do is put that front and center. A lot of what we want to do is like share these stories of people, you know, talking. Like I think the very famous case of Amanda Zarowski. And her story of how she wanted to build a family and wanted to have a child, and then complications happened. And the only way to have dealt with that is by getting an abortion. And another way that we try to like encourage men through the storytelling is we have their husbands talk as well. I think something so memorable to me was in our last fellowship cycle, Josh Shirowski came and talked to us.
Wow.
And told us of how, you know, he had this very, you know, a unique experience of pain as this was happening to his wife, where he was, you know, they were going through the struggle of they didn't know, can we get this care? She is now, you know, they had to wait until she went septic, until she could actually get the health care she needed. And he shared with us how not only was he going through the pain of almost thinking he's going to lose his wife, but then later he then wasn't able to process the fact that they had lost their first chance at trying to have a child. And that this kind of hit him double time, was that first he was so worried about losing her, and then later on it hit him, oh my gosh, we also lost this child that we were so excited to have, that we had bought baby clothes for.
And could I just add, I saw Amanda at the conference, and she's a brilliant human being and such a fierce advocate. They want to have a baby. They still are going through all the things to have a baby, but because of the circumstances, because she almost died, her uterus has been permanently injured and they are struggling mightily. So this is a couple that want to have a family. It's so frustrating to me as a doctor and as a woman, as a mom. Help me. Help me, guys.
It's one of those other things you don't have the answer for.
Yeah.
You know, you're supposed to be doing, you want to be pro-family, right? And they say they're pro-family when they make these laws, but then you see what happens here. And I think a lot of men need to realize this is impacting, you know, this would impact you if you want to build a family too.
Yeah.
Right? The exact same thing can happen.
Well, we see a lot of these mixed messages. I mean, Craig, I know you see this a lot. They say one thing and then they do another, or right. They say one thing and then their actions are completely different.
Right. These are the stories that need to be out there. People need to be aware of, because most of the time it doesn't mean something to you unless it happens to you. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't happen, you need to hear how other things affect you.
And by the time that it happens to you, you could be alone. It will just be you. These stories have to be shared.
So how do we create those environments to share these stories? Alan, that's your charge with member choice.
I thought it was maybe someone else.
Well, we've got one more segment. So when we come back, you're still in the hot seat.
All right. I'm ready.
All right. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on WGBW, WISS, and the Civic Media Radio Network.
I left you in this ocean of trials and errors, but who
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm sitting here with a bunch of dudes talking about abortion, Men for Choice. We've got Alan Tipple here. He's the Wisconsin youth organizer with Men for Choice. We've got Abraham Lierley, my adult son. It's just funny. I don't know.
And she will never say, and public school teacher.
Right.
Yeah. She just keeps.
Yeah. And proud public school teacher.
Proud.
Yes. And my partner, Greg Carlson,
proud
police officer,
yes.
Having a very interesting conversation about abortion. This is like a motley crew, but it's so important. How do we keep this conversation going? I mean, Men for Choice is the organizing impetus in a lot of places. And that's really important, because without that nidus, that catalyst, it doesn't happen. But how do we have these conversations in our homes and in the places where other, maybe less constructive conversations are happening now?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's just bring it up when it's relevant, you know, and don't shy away from talking about it either. I think a lot of people, you know, will kind of retract back into their shells when they hear the word abortion mentioned in a conversation, which I think, you know, can be reasonable depending on the people you're around. Mm-hmm. But if someone is being loud about abortion in a room and they're saying either, you know, stuff you agree with or stuff you don't agree with, they're already being loud. It's now your turn to speak, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and in a less confrontational sense, you know. If you're ever having conversations with your friends about politics, you know, very fun conversations to have, obviously.
Craig, you love those.
It's another conversation to have. It's another topic that is very, very big happening right now. And I think, you know, it's worth it just to bring up that conversation and tell your, you know, guy friends or the people you're talking about what's going on.
And sometimes it can be really effective just to say, you know, we've had this conversation. I disagree.
Yeah.
And, you know, respectfully, you don't need to make a big thing of it. Just sometimes letting people know where you stand, it won't change any minds in the moment, won't change any minds in a week, but it provides that sort of an anchor. It gives a face to that idea for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it makes it not an abstract thing just floating around that you hear on weird podcasts.
it's the calm voice of reason is what you need to do. If people shouting at each other is not going to solve anything. Nobody's going to listen. Mm-hmm. It's those little things, those little moments where you can interject some facts. Mm-hmm. Just let that person think, all right, maybe I do need to think about this. Yeah.
Because you probably make assumptions about people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you absolutely do.
Yeah. So to be able to just like gently say who you are and what you stand for, I think is really important.
Yeah. And something great about that is when you know, stand up in that room or you say it, like you just say I disagree, or you make that mention, you'll find out more people around you were similarly being quiet because they didn't want to say anything, and you'll find out, oh, look, I actually have more people with me in this room than I thought I did. Mm-hmm. And it can really give you that, you know, sense of community, or, you know, change your mind about some pre-notions you might have had about some other people.
And it may not be at that moment, but mm-hmm. it could be after the fact to say, hey, I'm with you. I understand. And those are those moments that you know that it's being impactful on people.
I also just want to bring up, there's a lot of just like calming power in taking these hyper-partisan sort of toxic online like arguments and fights that you see and bringing it back and grounding it in reality and being like, oh, okay, people don't actually hold these bizarre, crazy takes. It's a really grounding experience to just have a conversation not online, to not just be reading comments, to actually realize this person I disagree with has strong convictions behind what they're saying, and I understand how they got to that point. Being able to understand somebody else in person is so valuable at the end of the day.
It really speaks to the power of storytelling, because many of us have very personal stories about reproductive health that we just keep to ourselves, whether it's just because it's hard to talk about, or it's shameful, or it's inappropriate in this environment. And when you can share a story like that, it's wild how the kind of understanding that it can create. I mean, how many times, Craig, have we been to events where people have come up to me after I've said things publicly and they've shared a miscarriage story or told me about a problem they have with their uterus or, you know, whatever. I mean, men our age talking about an abortion that they and their partner had in college that they still think about.
Yeah, it happens all the time, more than people want to admit. And that's the incredible thing of going to these events and seeing that happen every single time.
And bringing the humanity back into the conversation is so important, because people get so disconnected when it's just online all the time. But when you see someone in front of you telling you this story, it really hits home. It's really like, oh, wow, okay, this is a person in front of me that this has happened to, that has been caused severe pain by this. And I think that, you know, a lot of people who maybe online will say very harsh things or have very harsh opinions, when they see someone in front of them, or they see a family member, or they see a friend talk about this and their personal experience with them, it really opens their eyes.
It certainly does. And when you think about it, the history, like in your family, some of the family stories that you start to unpack and you realize, oh, wait, this person, like I have family members who were adopted by their sisters and brothers, or people who have had cancer situations, or there have been so many reproductive hiccups in our ancestors' lives that we just don't talk about. They didn't talk about generationally, but now we have to talk about it, because this is an issue that is so much in the forefront when it comes to politics and the leaders that we choose and how divided we are as a country. So there's never been a more important time to bring back the humanity. I love that you said that, Alan, because I think that that's the key to it. Absolutely. The conversations, the stories, the humanity. You three have brought that back for us today, and I'm so profoundly grateful to you all. Craig, I know that this is a funny conversation to be having with you, but it's brilliant, and I'm so glad you're here. Abe, thanks for making the trip up to Milwaukee from Milwaukee. It's great to have you here. Alan, you're doing incredible work. Please keep doing it. Menforchoice.org, if people want to learn more.
Yes,
and get involved with the fellowship. Do the work. We're gonna pull people together. We are doing it. Yeah. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can find me at Dr. Kristen Lairley on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, Substack, YouTube. It's exhausting, all of the different platforms. And we are at civicmedia.us or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next week.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.